Cuomo News Radio, everything you need to know. Now, Newsline with Ken Schramm.
You know, I don't really get the principle of a fleeting expletive. I think the very premise of an expletive is that it kind of hangs in the air. But I guess, you know, I'm not a Supreme Court justice, nor have I thrown any fleeting expletives out there, at least not for a while. Thanks for rejoining me here, Newsline PM, on this Thursday afternoon. I appreciate it. What am I talking about? The U.S. Supreme Court kind of took the fines away. This was the Federal Communications Commission versus Fox television stations. And at risk here was a fine that was fostered off on Fox because it was a fleeting expletive, and on ABC because there was, I think it was somebody's butt was filling up the TV screen on NYPD Blue. How many years ago was that? But the broadcasters were hoping that the U.S. Supreme Court would just throw out the whole FCC ability to police content on radio and television. I know ABC's Andy Field was looking forward to, you know, using a whole bunch of those George Carlin words, and now he can't.
Did you hear it? That was a fleeting expletive. You have to rewind the tape. It was very quick.
How are you, Andy?
Very good, Ken. No, this is kind of a non-decision. It's very technical, and basically what it says is that Fox and CBS and all those networks where you see award shows, and now they get bleeped because it costs a lot of money to fight these fines, even if you don't end up having to pay them. So most of these award show you see that they say it's live, it's usually on a very, very long delay, so that if someone drops an F-bomb here or an expletive or decides to show a body part, the producers of the networks can very quickly hit a button, censor it, so that you will not be offended in any way, shape, or form. The problem is that when these fines happened, they didn't have those delays, and Cher let loose with a couple of choice salty words, and I think Nicole Richie and that NYPD Blue that you mentioned. And also, we remember Janet Jackson at the Super Bowl, which virtually no one saw until they got the tape back and freeze framed it.
That was, you know, that you want to talk about fleeting. If it wasn't for a pause on tape, and that was back in the days when tape was still being used, you'd never would have seen it.
So basically what the Supreme Court said was that broadcasters could not have known that a fleeting, as you mentioned, expletive or a shot of someone's derriere would cause them millions of dollars in fines. And so they said on a very narrow decision that they made that they throw out the fines. But then the Supreme Court said, look, you know, the FCC can go back and rework these things so that broadcasters know about it, which they certainly know about now anyway. The broadcasters, me and everyone else who does this for a living and puts things out on the public airwaves are saying that things have changed dramatically. Back when you and I and a few of the older folks were kids, there were only three TV stations and just a handful of radio stations in every market. And they were all over public airwaves. That's not the case anymore.
Yeah.
We have hundreds upon hundreds of cable stations, TV networks that air exclusively on the Internet, and they don't have these restrictions. Only people who have a broadcast license to broadcast over the air.
Which is interesting because even the justices noted that most people are no longer really consciously discerning when they switch from a broadcast to a broadcast channel to a cable channel.
Well, not only that, but with DVRs now, people don't even know what network they're watching. They just go, there's a show, and I watch it, and I tape it, and I'll watch it, or not tape it. They're actually putting it on a physical disc. And they watch it later on, and that's actually hurt broadcasters another way because they're losing revenue from advertising. People skip right over the ads, so that's another problem altogether.
Yeah, now everyone is waiting. I think the most anticipated decision is on the constitutionality of the Affordable Health Care Act. And I'll tell you the truth, I was fully expecting it to come down last Monday.
I think it's the toughest decision they have, and I think that's why they're saving it for last. Of course, they actually made their decision months ago. They get in a room right after the arguments, and everyone votes, and they say, what do you think, what do you think? And then they spend all that time writing arguments to support their decisions, and then, of course, they come back and take another vote. But I think this has been decided for a long time, and it's probably going to be the last thing they do before they go on recess, which would be next week. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. You know, there are actually people that are running odds. You can actually bet on the outcome of this. I can't remember the website, but it's running 80-1 against the president's health care plan. That 80% of the people betting on this are saying that the Supreme Court's going to throw it out
in its entirety. Because I think that there's some discernment there in respect to. There may be elements that they leave intact, but there are some elements that if they take the legs out from under it, everything collapses.
Well, I think the biggest issue is the mandate. Can the government force right. you to buy health insurance? The government certainly can force you to pay taxes and do these other things. Those have been decided. And I think it was really in the writing of the law. If they had made this a tax, this probably would not have been put into the law. But President Obama wanted to compromise with Republicans. And in fact, this was originally a Republican idea that that there would be a mandate that you have to pay something so that the rest of us don't pay for your sickness. Right now, if you don't have insurance, and Ken, you and I do, someone goes to the emergency room, you and I...
We're paying for it.
We pay for it because our premiums go up to pay for the people who can't afford it. What this bill was supposed to do was to make it fair for everyone, to say, look, everyone's got to pay something.
Well, this is, you're, I think, absolutely correct, the most contentious and the most anticipated decision. And I think you're also correct in that I think the court justices are probably spit-shining their dissent and in favor of arguments that'll be used.
And again, if they throw out the mandate, but they keep everything else, which some very popular things, keeping your kid on health care till they're 26, because a lot of them are out of work and certainly they even don't get health care if they get a new job. The other thing is the pre-existing conditions, which has put many people out of the market for health care. Those are in the bill, and you'd be hard-pressed to find people on any side that says those aren't good ideas.
Yeah, it is. The mandate is the linchpin to all of this.
Well, without quickly, the mandate, you can't afford to do those things.
Real quickly, before we run out of time, what about the Arizona law? Because the Arizona immigration law, the federal government says, hey, look, we are the ones that our immigration laws trump the ones that you put together at the state in Arizona. Says, well, this matches what you do, kind of, sort of.
Well, you know, that's another tough case. You know, the federal government has had jurisdiction over immigration issues for a long time. But in Arizona, their argument is, look, this is directly affecting our state, our resources, the money we pay, because people who are coming over illegally are taking up resources from people who are paying taxes, very much like the health care bill. If someone comes in here, they're an illegal immigrant, and they go into the health care system, again, the people with health care are paying for people who aren't supposed to be in this country for those things, for education, for services, all those things.
Well, I'll tell you what, Andy, I look forward to the day when we can unedited sit and exchange all those George Carlin.
Oh, I think we'd run out of swear words pretty quick.
Oh, no. I think we'd have plenty of time to come up with creative profanity. Thank you. ABC's Andy Field. Good talking with you.
Thanks, Ken.
All right. In a moment, you know who was on Conan O'Brien last night? Not just a quartet of Romneys, but what do you call it? A quintet. A quintet of Romneys on Conan O'Brien.
Seattle's waking up to the Como Morning News 5 to 9. Right now, Newsline PM with Ken Schramm on Como News Radio.
Oh, that irascible Mitt Romney. He of Republican presidential aspirations. Does Mitt need some humanizing? I think that was the motive. Last night, all five of Romney's sons, five sons, were on Conan. They were sitting there with Team Coco. What I thought was interesting is that all of them were required to wear name tags because they do kind of look alike. And, you know, I would have expected more out of Conan. He has some usually has some edge to his humor or some bite to it, but he was kind of soft. Anyway, one of the things that Conan wanted to clear up was that, you know, he wanted to clear up a few things that he'd heard about Mitt Romney. So for the five sons, he put together this quick true or false quiz for them.
True or false, your dad can moonwalk?
We've heard that that's true, but we haven't seen it, so we can't.
Does anyone here?
I've never witnessed that.
Well, wait, because people were telling you your dad can moonwalk. If someone told me my dad could moonwalk, I would find out immediately.
It's over. I mean, he's got like turf toe or something, or plantar fasciitis, so it's no longer possible.
So is he claiming that he once could?
It's probably the claim.
True or false, your dad went to college on a croquet scholarship?
Also news.
How did you find that out?
Also news.
You need to tell people that's not true. People are like, I didn't know.
Yeah, false.
Campaign
false.
Mr.
False. False. Okay, false. Very good. The campaigns what say deny that. True or false, your dad loves to sing.
True.
True. Yeah. He likes Roy Orbison in particular, but he'll sing whatever.
You know, he had a Will Ferrell skit stuck in his head for about 5 years. There was the Will Ferrell cheerleader skit, the Saturday Night Live skit?
Yes, of course, yeah.
So they were at a swim meet, and they, you know, were cheering for the swimmers, and there was the taco burrito, something's coming out of your Speedo. And anytime you mention that word, taco or burrito, you knew my dad would chime in.
Oh, yeah.
Automatic. And then immediately moonwalking as he did it. Backwards.
Automatic.
Okay. True or false, your dad's hair is chiseled out of imported African mahogany.
That is true.
True. Okay. True or false, when your dad's feeling under the weather, you call Dell Tech Support. You don't have to talk about that one.
He doesn't actually ever get sick.
Yeah.
Boy, now that's something I would pay to see. Mitt Romney doing a Will Ferrell imitation? Oh, yeah. I'd pay good money for that. One of the other things that Conan got into is he wound up getting the boys to reveal some little-known facts about their dad.
First of all, you claim that he likes pranks.
He does like pranks. Oh, he doesn't like to get pranked.
No one does like to get pranked.
We learned that the hard way. We've learned that the hard way. I know we have one of those basements at our house, one of those scary, you know, old New England basements, as you probably grew up with. And you had to walk in like 3 or 4 steps into the basement to turn the light, you know, pull the light switch down. So I heard my dad coming down the stairs, and I turned the light off and hid back there. And so I saw him walk in the room, was trying to justify.
How long ago was this, by the way?
This was a while ago.
Okay, good. So he didn't have Secret Service protection at the time. Because that's a really stupid idea. Yeah.
So as he's looking for the light, I grab his arm
in the dark.
And scream in the dark, and it terrified him.
Did he shriek? Did he scream?
He shrieked a bit, yeah, a little shriek.
You just admitted your dad shrieked.
he turns the lights on and looks at me and just tackles me to the ground and says, you know, and he's wrestling me to the ground. He goes, was it worth it? And I'm sitting there.
Because now I'm bringing the heat.
And that just made it that much funnier. And so I'm like, yeah, still worth it, Dad. And he keeps wrestling me. Still worth it? Yeah, still worth it, Dad.
That's a very frightening prank to jump out at your father in the dark.
He didn't like it.
No, he didn't like it.
Yeah, then there was one of the boys, one of the Mitt Romney's sons, remembered a time when their dad pulled a prank on a friend of his.
What pranks does he like to play pranks? And if so, what kind of prank does he like to play?
Yeah, he likes to play a lot of pranks.
I remember a story from when he was in high school, I guess it was a little after high school, and his friend was getting married, and he found his way into the hotel room ahead of time, and all the groom's outfit was there, and he took some pink nail polish and wrote on the first shoe HE and on the sole and the next one LP, and then no one noticed it. But then when it was a Catholic wedding, and when he knelt down to be blessed by the Father, the words help appeared.
It's a very good prank.
Yeah, I'm not sure they're still friends, but
no. No, the wife wouldn't think that was funny.
Actually, I think that actually is pretty darn clever. I'm actually thinking that's pretty good. I'm still stuck, though. I don't know if I'll get the image out of my head. Mitt Romney as Will Ferrell.
Reporting the news, understanding the news. Newsline PM with Ken Schramm on Como News Radio.
Well, from at least the late 70s, early 80s, the mantra from obstetricians around the country is, you're going to have a baby. No beer, no bourbon. No burgundy, no booze. Now, that may change.
Como News Radio, everything you need to know. Now, Newsline with Ken Schramm.
I don't know what kind of confusion this is going to lead to, but I'm going to guess it's going to lead to some confusion, that's for darn sure. I mentioned earlier that it's been at least since the late 70s, early 80s, where obstetricians have said, look, you're pregnant. No more booze. No wine, no hard liquor, no beer. Just stay away from alcohol. It's going to be better for your child. Now there's a study that has come out of Denmark that says they have found no differences in the IQs of five-year-olds whose mothers drank. And this is including mothers who binged. So there was one study, one element of the study found that women who drank at least 9 drinks per week had children who at age 5 had a lower attention span. But the IQs of those kids weren't much different than the kids of women who drank less. And this is backed up by yet another study that came out a couple of years ago that said, you know, look, there's really not going to be any cognitive problems if you have a glass or two of alcohol every once in a while. So, you know, this softening of the mantra, you're pregnant, don't drink, there's some erosion here in terms of what kind of information we're getting. Dr. Carrie Martin is with Swedish Hospital, joins me on Newsline PM. Thanks for being here, Doc.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
So now we're going to have all these pregnant women just pounding down some Mai Tais and bourbon and sevens and, you know, give me that bottle of wine with a straw in it.
Yeah, oh boy, I hope not.
How difficult is it to communicate to, you know, to someone during their pregnancy what a balance is? Because people have a different sense of things, don't they?
Well, I think that's exactly right. And you have to take all things into consideration. We know that alcohol is metabolized in the liver, but we also know that people do that very differently. And so defining that, what is safe, I think, is a very slippery slope. Giving women and giving yourself the permission to have just one drink, well, how large is that drink? How is that metabolized in this person? And the safest thing, truly, is to, you know, not erode the recommendations, as you say, and truly not drink when you're pregnant, I think, is absolutely the safest bet for women.
Haven't there always been those obstetricians that kind of go, look, if you want to have a glass of wine every once in a while, it's okay?
Oh, I'm sure they're out there. And, you know, it varies. How big is your glass of wine compared to somebody else's?
Well, you know, they want to ban the 16-ounce glasses in New York, so
exactly.
You wouldn't be able to get an above in a 16-ounce glass of wine there.
Right, right. Well, so there you have that. Well, you know, I think our group is, you know, here at Seattle OBGYN, we are still fairly adamant with all of our patients that we just don't know what that safe level is. We do know that baby's brain is growing, you know, up to 200% in that last trimester of pregnancy. And that development is so important to all of us that the safest thing truly is to be conservative and abstain and really stay away from the alcohol.
What kind of problems arise from different studies that, you know, one day it's don't drink coffee, then the next day it's, oh, a cup of coffee is really going to help you. Don't eat any red meat. Oh, okay, this kind of red meat is good. So, I mean, there seems to be conflicting studies that come from the medical community that oftentimes, you get this contradictory information. And right. How can people put faith in what these medical studies purport to say if they don't have any credibility?
Well, I think that many of them many of them have excellent credibility, and you have to look at how that was done. And it does. It's difficult for many of us to look at these studies and decide what's best in our lives. And I think that's where your provider comes in such an important way, in what do these studies mean for me? How do I apply this to what I'm going to do with my life as opposed to what this woman, the woman in Denmark or France or in a different place will do. And I think that's the most important thing, is find somebody that you trust, that's knowledgeable, and have a discussion with them. I think that there are so many ways to prove different things in studies that it is very difficult to to pin that down into an exact science.
Yeah, I think you have the the general public, who has often a difficult time disseminating, you know, even with a great relationship with your care provider. There's right. going to be differing opinions, and it may depend on, you know, I love coffee, and now right. I hear coffee's good for me, but my doctor said no, don't drink it. Well, I'm going to say, oh, I'd rather drink the coffee, so I'm going to believe the study.
Right, right. Yeah, you've got to find somebody you trust, and a lot of rationalization that goes, especially with alcohol. You know, they say judgment is the first to go. You have one glass and think, wow, that tasted really good. I think I'll have another. I think you have to be careful. We all want to hear what we want to hear. And so sometimes it's difficult to follow the safest advice. And studies are not perfect. You have to oftentimes look at many, many studies over the years to really find the risks that are involved. So,
And when you talk about, because one of the studies mentioned, you know, having up to 9 drinks or 10 drinks a week.
That's, is that all at once, or are you spreading that over some days?
Yeah, that's the other thing. But you know, then I wonder, because there has been so much, and I don't know if we're continuing to underline the risks that are involved when it comes to, like, fetal alcohol syndrome.
Right.
Does that fall by the wayside when you get information like this and people say, well, binge drinkers, you know, their kids were okay by the time they were 5. I can go ahead and binge drink.
Yeah. Well, we sure haven't seen how they are when they're 10.
Correct.
And they could turn out
like me.
Yeah. I think you have to be very careful. We have done so much in education now that people know that alcohol is bad. And fetal alcohol syndrome, the numbers are declining, and we're not seeing nearly as much as we used to. It's a little frightening to think that we can justify 9 glasses a week and to think that that's not going to come back. Metabolism is so varied in people that I think, you know, really you've got to take the results of these studies with a whole lot of caution, and let's not go back to seeing more fetal alcohol syndrome and serious issues.
And, you know, and for, you know, for pregnant women, everything that goes through your bloodstream is going through the bloodstream of that fetus, that little kid
Absolutely.
That's growing in there.
Right,
and to
right.
keep that in mind and at least use that as a fulcrum to try to lend a little bit more weight to some common sense.
Absolutely.
You know, I don't know if I believe these doofuses in Denmark. What do they know anyway? Come on. 9
yeah.
drinks a week. We're talking that's, 2 drinks, you know, that's almost like, what is it, 1.5 drinks a day or something.
That's a lot of alcohol for any of us, I think, especially when you're pregnant. Boy, that's...
Have you
That's
had any blowback from any of your patients regarding this study? Have they asked you about it, or has there been inquiries, or what?
You know, not yet, but I am fully expecting some. I really will hold firm on my view that none is best, and that fetus is something that should be protected, and we really need to be careful with what we're putting into our bodies.
All right. Dr. Carrie Martin with Swedish Hospital, very good talking with you. Thank you for
your
time.
Thank you very much.
All right,
thanks
you take care.
Thanks for having me. Bye.
All right, I'm putting this out there. If you're a mom, you're a mom-to-be, did you drink when you were pregnant? And if you've never been pregnant, would you drink if you were going to be pregnant? 206-421-1000 is the local line, 877-397-COMO, 877-397-5666. Does this study give you enough momentum to go ahead and say, okay, I can have a few drinks?
What happens next happens on the Como Afternoon News today at 3. Now, Newsline PM with Ken Schramm on Como News Radio.
I'll tell you, I'm looking at the analysis of these studies with the considerable skepticism. We're talking about a series of studies that were done in Denmark. The conclusion is that there is no difference in the IQs of 5-year-olds whose mothers drank when they were pregnant. And this stipulates to say this is even moms who binge drink. Now, binge drinking is regarded as 5 or more drinks at a time. What they define as lower amounts is 1 to 4 drinks a week. Moderate is 5 to 8 drinks a week. And higher amounts are at least 9 drinks a week of alcohol. And they're saying that in the end, there's no real discernible difference between moms who drank different levels of alcohol during their pregnancy and moms who didn't drink at all. There's really nothing to distinguish the kids by the time they are 5 years old. So the question I'm putting out to you, if you're a mom, did you drink when you were pregnant? Or if you are pregnant right now, will you drink having heard of this study? Or are you going to talk to your obstetrician and, you know, find out what's what? 206-421-1000, 877-397-COMO. We'll kick this off with Carol in Bellingham. You're up on Newsline PM.
Hi. Yeah, I have two kids, and I was very careful, but I did have some wine while I was pregnant, not in my first trimester, and definitely not any multiple drinks or anything, maybe a half a glass of wine. Both of them are fine. I don't necessarily agree with 9 drinks a week. That's pretty high.
I think that's really high. In fact, they stipulate binge drinking, they're saying, is 5 or more drinks at a time.
Right, and I don't agree with that.
Let me ask you, what was it about your first trimester where you were so diligent in avoiding alcohol, and then in your second you thought, well, okay, I can have a half a glass of wine?
Well, in my opinion, it's nothing based on any research or anything. It was just in my opinion, that's the most fragile time of the fetus, and I wanted to get past that point before I did anything like that. But at the same time, you know, there's a lot of moms out there that when they're going through their pregnancy, there's so much anxiety, they can do more damage, in my opinion anyway, if they're not dealing with that anxiety. And in one way is having a half a glass of wine in the evening.
Does this study change your mind or opinion about that at all?
No. I mean, the study really, in my mind, doesn't sound...
Yeah, I'm with you. This study doesn't. I'm sorry, man. I'm looking at this thing with a whole bunch of skepticism. Thanks, Carol. I appreciate your call. All right, 206-421-1000, Marilyn in Federal Way. You're up on Newsline PM.
Hi. Okay, on this subject, I have to admit that I did not abstain totally from alcohol when I was pregnant either. But with this study, and maybe that's going to influence me, would influence me now. I'm too old to get pregnant anymore, but it would influence me a little bit. I did not drink in my first trimester. I didn't do that.
Wait a minute, it would
influence me.
You didn't drink in your first trimester?
Trimester.
Okay, so you were like the previous caller. You felt that was a very, sensitive time?
Yeah, and I was thinking, because there was alcoholism in my family, maybe I thought that would be in the genes or something. I don't know what I thought, but I was just more careful. I was really careful in my first trimester.
All right, thanks. Thanks, Marilyn. I appreciate you sharing that.
Thanks.
All right, have a good one. 206-421-1000. I'm saying again that this, I'm looking at this with incredible skepticism. I think especially where they're saying binge drinking doesn't harm the kids. And we heard from, the doctor that, fetal alcohol syndrome is down. What are we going to have to do, battle that issue again? Linda in Snohomish, you're up on Newsline PM.
Hi, Ken. I'm so glad that you are talking about this today. I have 14 adopted kids, 9 of them through the state, 9 of them with alcohol-related diagnoses. And what I wanted to say about this is, until you've lived with a child with fetal alcohol syndrome or fetal alcohol syndrome disabilities, you may be able to blow this all off, but it is not an easy life to live with these kids. It can be true that their IQ does not change, but there is so much more to a person than just their IQ.
You know, I did notice that they didn't talk about any behavioral issues.
Exactly. Behavior, executive functioning, which is a huge piece of FAS. That's one of the things that gets impacted. And although on a lot of kids with fetal alcohol syndrome, if you do an MRI, you don't see structural changes, what happens is there's a lot of chemical changes in the brain. And these chemical changes cause behavior issues, short-term memory loss. My kids struggle every single day.
And these are kids, and I thank you for your call, Linda.
Yeah.
I think that's what's at play here. I think studies like this really do more harm then good. Because I think it gives, I think the sensible individual is going to go, okay, that means I can have a glass of wine every once in a while. The person who was on the bubble, they're just going to start pounding them down. Hang with us here in a moment. Going to talk about whether the torchlight parade is sexist.
Reporting the news, understanding the news. Newsline PM with Ken Schramm on Como News Radio.
All right, real quickly, here are the last 10 years worth of grand marshals for the torchlight parade. Apollo Ono, Butch Voris, Elvis, or a reasonable facsimile. Let's see, Darth Vader, Dan Wilson, Warren Moon, Dave Niehaus, Sig Henson, Pat O'Day shared the honor with Mike Holmgren. And then we get to 2010, we have Apollo Ono again. 2011, it's going to be Drew Carey. He's the Minority Sounders owner. And this year, it is Duff McKagan. I have just one question that's been pointed out in all of this. Where are the women? We'll find out in a moment.